From Charter Hall and Banish, this is Sustainability Fervor. I'm your host, Lottie Diehl. You're listening to Sustainability Fervor, a podcast by Charter Hall, one of Australia's leading property groups. Charter Hall is focused on leveraging its large-scale platform to drive positive impacts and maximize value for its stakeholders. Welcome back to another episode of the Sustainability Fervor podcast. Today, we're going to delve into the complexities of climate risk management and uncover practical strategies for navigating the transition to clean energy. From renewable energy solutions to policy insights, Jessica and Jill offer invaluable expertise to corporate clients that are seeking to embrace sustainability and drive positive change. So thank you both so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. To kick off the episode, I want to ask a question that I ask every single one of the guests that we have on, and that is, what does the word sustainability mean to you?
Thanks, Lottie. It's a pleasure to be here today. And first, I'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation from where I'm broadcasting today, and pay my respects to the elders past and present. Back to the question, this is a very good question. Sustainability to me is about conducting business responsibly, developing and pursuing strategies that support both the ongoing creation of value to the business and the health of the environment and societies. More specifically, in the context of renewable energy transition in Australia, sustainability means breaking away from the dependence on burning coal, a fossil fuel used for electricity generation, and embracing cleaner resources such as solar and wind power.
I think that's a really great response and something that kind of looks at the current definition of sustainability, but ultimately what we're looking to move towards in the future. So climate risk is a really critical consideration for businesses today, but could you please provide an overview of what climate risk entails for our listeners today, Jessica?
Yeah, sure. So climate risk includes all risks associated with our destabilizing climate. As you can imagine, Lottie, this is a very broad area. At Energetics, we have a whole team solely dedicated to climate risk management. But at a very high level, climate risk can be grouped into physical, transition, and financial risks. In terms of physical risks, we can think of portfolios being exposed to extreme weather events like floods, bushfires, increasing temperatures. As for transition risks, these are associated with the introduction of policies that may impact your business. So an example of that could be the introduction of a carbon price scheme that can put significant pressure on a business that relies mostly on fossil fuels. And then for financial risks could be maybe investors and lenders downgrading your credit rating or even denying a credit line if your business is not managing your climate risks.
I think you've outlined those very well and very clearly, because I think with this new space and this new area that we're going into at the moment, it can be very scary for corporations and businesses. So what are the potential implications for corporations?
This is a very good question. In terms of major implications for Australian business, the climate risk management is set to evolve in 2024. So the federal government is in the process of implementing a mandatory climate-related financial framework based on the Australian Sustainability Reporting Standards, which is aligned with global standards. This has been described as the biggest financial reporting change since the introduction of the GST. And what this means is that Australian companies will be required not only to disclose their carbon inventory and supply chain emissions, also known as Scope 3, but also report on the transition the company needs to make by 2050 to be net zero. And on top of that, the impact that climate change will have on their financial performance. So it's not just a carbon inventory. It's not only about risks, but it's also about opportunities. And companies will be required to integrate what was typically a sustainability data set into financial reports. So it will be a big change.
I think it is a really big change, and I think a lot of businesses are seeing it probably as quite a daunting change as well, but it's really exciting, and I think it's really great to see what is going to happen and how we are going to evolve. So on that, Jill, I want to throw to you, because I feel like understanding the energy market can be really complex for businesses. So could you please just kind of zoom out a little bit and help provide a bit of a basic overview of how the energy market in Australia works, particularly really focusing in that context of renewable energy procurement?
Thanks, Lottie. I will focus mostly on renewable energy procurement, because the energy market itself is, as you said, complex and very wide. We have different electricity markets in Australia, and I think we would need several hours to talk about all of that. So in the context of procuring renewable electricity, it's important to understand that once electricity is dispatched to the grid, the power grid, you cannot trace its origin. What it means is that when you, Lottie, for example, you consume electricity, there is no way of differentiating whether it comes from a coal-fired power station or from a solar farm or a wind farm. So to address this challenge, large-scale renewable energy generators, those that operate these solar farms, these wind farms, can create a certificate. And for each megawatt hour, so a unit of energy that they dispatch to the power network, they can create a certificate. These certificates, these renewable energy certificates, in turn, represent then the renewable energy attribute for this power that was generated from a renewable energy source, and they become a tradable commodity, meaning you can buy them, you can sell them, and they are separate from the power itself. So for all companies that commit to a renewable energy target, the process involves sourcing these renewable energy certificates from a renewable energy generator, or purchase them from a third party, such as an electricity retailer, and then to surrender them to the regulator. In Australia, it's the Clean Energy Regulator, to justify then the claim that you used renewable electricity to support the consumption of your assets. And it's very important to understand that if you sell the certificates, because you want to monetize their value, as I said, they are tradable commodity, you will not be able to make the claim related to the renewable energy attributes. So in terms of how a company can then purchase these certificates, there are multiple ways. The most common one is buying the certificates bundled with electricity. You can enter, for example, into a short-term contract, including in your standard electricity supply agreement. For example, you, Lottie, for your own house, you could well enter into a green power retail agreement with your retailer, and the retailer will commit to deliver this type of certificate and surrender them to the clean energy regulator. But often for our clients, energetics clients, large corporations, what they're looking for is to manage their long-term market risks in both the electricity market and the separate renewable energy certificate markets, those tradable commodities I mentioned before. So what they do, they enter into a long-term contract for at least typically 5 years plus, commonly referred as a renewable power purchase agreement, or a renewable PPI. Those agreements, those PPIs or power purchase agreements, typically have a strong notional linkage to a specific solar farm or a specific wind farm. So large corporations are looking for such association with an asset, with a specific renewable energy project, rather than relying on buying certificates from the market. Why do they do that? Well, typically because they want to demonstrate that they supported a new additional renewable energy project reaching financial close in the market, or to provide evidence that are indirectly supporting local communities. That's typically the marketing benefits that corporations are looking for beyond the risk management strategy of entering into a long-term contract at a fixed price for the supply of the certificates. It's important, however, to understand that as soon as you do that, that you enter into a contract that is a power purchase agreement with a notional linkage to an asset, then you have a tighter connection to a specific asset. You tend to have then greater risks, contractual risks, like potential delay in the project being delivered and being able to produce electrons, as well as uncertainties related to the project production performance.
I think those are some really great points that you've just raised there, Jill, and talking about those long-term market risks and then PPA, all of these fun new terms that I'm learning about today. But you've just mentioned as well, there are a couple of factors that organizations and corporations might consider. But for Jess, I'd love to hear from you. What are some of the other key factors that businesses should actually be considering when it comes to assessing their energy market dynamics and making decisions about these, about renewable energy procurement? Because it sounds, as well as Jill has explained it, it still sounds quite complicated.
Fair enough. And I think this is a very important question. And I usually like to take a step back to remind us that over 60% of all the electricity generated in Australia in 2023 was from coal power generation. The federal government has a target to reach 82% of renewable electricity by 2030. So we have a huge transformation undergoing in the electricity market in Australia, and I cannot stress this enough. On top of that, we are seeing major delays and challenges faced by the renewable build-out. So over the longer term, lower-cost renewable energy will displace more expensive power generation, putting downward pressure on pricing. However, until 2030, there remains a lot of uncertainty around the generation mix and how the system will cope. On the other side, though, demand for renewable energy from companies has never been so strong. An example of that is the transactions announced, renewable PPA transactions announced in 2024 so far, have already smashed all the previous year's records. So as a result, we do expect price volatility to persist in the coming years. And bringing back now to your question, when companies are making decisions about renewable energy procurement, they should understand the market is quite tight. So starting the process sooner rather than later and bringing key stakeholders along on the journey is critical because the impact on budget can be significant.
I love it how you equally, you just broke my heart with that statistic as well about our reliance on fossil fuels, but then you brought it back with a good positive at the end to give me hope again that businesses are making the right steps when it and looking to procure more renewable energy. So what are those main steps that a business would typically follow when they are looking to procure renewable energy? And what should they be looking for, like in terms of what best suits their own needs?
When procuring renewable energy, companies should understand their sustainability drivers. They should also understand electricity consumption and their appetite for budget certainty and risk. So in terms of sustainability drivers, it's important for the company to understand if they want to show, for example, leadership supporting a new renewable project, or does the company want to be linked to a project that promotes opportunities to Aboriginal people or brings benefits to the local community. In terms of your consumption, is your company a smaller or a larger electricity user? Noting that if you're a smaller electricity user, there will be reduced optionality and competition in the market. So would you consider being part of a buyer's group for a potential better price? And then in terms of budget certainty and risk appetite, these are key factors that will steer the decision around the pricing structure and the duration of your contract.
No, it's some really great points and some really actionable advice that you've just provided there. So now, Jill, I'd love to ask you a little bit about government policies and regulations because they often shape the clean energy landscape. So I'd love to know, how does Energetics help businesses navigate all of these regulatory frameworks and also anticipate the policy changes that are related to clean energy?
That's a good point, Lottie. One of the risks for the clean energy transition, I would say, is the temptation for corporations to adopt a wait-and-see approach, despite the pressure from their shareholders to reduce their carbon footprint. It's an uncertain environment, and some corporations may think we are better off waiting until this settles and then we make decisions. Unfortunately, this transition will not be a smooth ride. There will be tight and volatile market conditions along the way, as just mentioned previously. I would guess here or predict that it will take at least a decade for the supply mix to change, for flexible demand to be more price responsive, and for the market rules to adjust to new challenges in both the physical and the financial markets. And therefore, big players, our large end users, and some of our clients aren't just sitting around and waiting for this to settle. They are actually seeking to manage proactively these market risks. So if I come back to your question now about how to navigate this environment, I would see two ways of answering this question. First of all, an upfront, when we engage with our clients about the clients that are considering a possible long-term contract for renewable energy, such as the power purchase agreements I mentioned before, we guide those clients through major trends of these markets. This involves providing forward-looking perspective about how these markets may evolve, what it means under different renewable energy sourcing strategies that they could adopt. There is obviously a lot of forecasting, a lot of risk analytics going on, given the unpredictability of this volatile market. The goal is not for energetics to predict the future, but rather to project a range of diverse yet equally plausible scenarios about how these markets could evolve. And that gives then a sense to our clients around how the different strategies could evolve and how they could potentially support their risk management strategies. So it's clearly very important for us as a financial services license provider to bring key stakeholders along this journey and develop a strategy that not only can handle different possible futures, but as well that aligns with their specific risk tolerance. Not all the strategies come with the same level of market risks. And this last point is very important because some of those products are risky. At the final stage, then, the second point of my response here, the final stage of the process, once we agree with the client around the product they would like to adopt and we engage the market to secure such arrangement, there is a negotiation going on. And then we are working very closely with our clients, obviously, but also their legal advisors. And we worked with a lot of very good specialized legal firms in Australia to negotiate commercial terms that future-proof the agreement against possible market rule changes that are contemplated over the coming years. So what we want to achieve is to have a fair mechanism for both the buyer, so the corporation, and the seller, typically the renewable energy generator or the retailer, without having to face a contract reopener each time there is a market rule change. So Both this upfront work with the clients around understanding the impact of market rule changes that could unfold in the future, and at the back end, negotiating terms that are relatively flexible in a fair arrangement should a market rule change be implemented, are the two ways for us to future-proof these long-term agreements.
I think there's some really great points that you've raised there, because as amazing as it would be to have a magic ball that we can just look into and see exactly into the future, we don't understand right now exactly what's going to go on. So I think planning for all of those different scenarios is something that is so crucial and so valuable. So just to finish, Jessica, I was wondering if you could explain to us or share a couple of examples of some really successful clean energy projects or some other sustainability initiatives that Energetics has been involved in, because I think that there would be so many lessons that other companies could learn from these experiences.
Sure. So Energetics has advised around 25% of all the corporate PPA transactions across the East Coast since 2020. We're constantly monitoring the market so we can provide the latest insights. In terms of some of the recent transactions we have advised on, we can probably point to Woolworths, Charter Hall, Brisbane Airport, and more recently, we are working with Tomago Aluminium, who is the largest electricity user in New South Wales. And as for lessons that other companies can take away from all this experience we have had, I suppose, as we said before, it's very important to understand that the market is tight and facing a huge shift. So the clean energy transition is not likely to be a smooth sailing. Having said that, though, it's important to have a long-term strategy to mitigate the risks around electricity pricing and finally understand the huge opportunity that this represents in the context of increasing pressure from investors and the public for climate-related action.
Now, I'm really excited to see what the future holds in this sector, as I'm sure both of you are as well. The work that you are doing is amazing. And as you said, it's going to be a bumpy road, but I feel like with the work that you're doing, it will be that little bit more smooth and we can all get there together. So thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you.
Thank you, Lottie, for having us.
Thank you, Lottie.
This conversation is part of Charter Hall and Banisher's podcast series, Sustainability Further. This series has been designed to inspire businesses and people to take action on environmental and social issues affecting our society. Sustainability Further is produced by Banish. Charter Hall's purpose is to create better futures by bringing aspirations to life.